won't back down.
This is Global Patriot Radio.
Hey, welcome to the Vito Esposito Show with Big Al, starring the godfather of Global Patriot Radio, the dawn of dissenting discussion, the Italian infidel himself, Vito Esposito. Him and his hitman, Big Al, are here to whack the leftists, shake down the Democrats, and put out a contract on all the jihadis that are messing with the American family. And if you got what it takes to be a wise guy, you can get made right here on the show by dialing 319-527-6706. So, get ready to go to the mattresses and say, Mamma Mia, no Sharia, because Vito and Big Al are going to give you a radio show you can't refuse.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Liberty and justice for all. Good evening, Global Patriots. You're listening to the Global Patriot Radio, the Vito Esposito Show. I'm Vito. Our calling number tonight in every Global Patriot Radio night is area code 319-527-6706. That's area code 319-527-6706. And I'm joined by that no pork eating American lover, Al. Good evening, Al. How are you? Al? Are you there? Hello? I guess he's not there.
I'm here.
Hey. Oh, you're here.
Anybody home?
Anybody home?
Anyone here?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hello? Hello? Hello? Hello? Leaving us all in suspense.
Yes, and I am here hitting the mute button to get off of mute, and I'm glad to be here as always.
Oh, my gosh, what a day it's been. Power outages, and but today is June 14, 2021. It is Flag Day, the Democrat Communist Woo-hoo. Party's worst day of the year, Flag Day. It commemorates the great old glory. Old Glory proudly erected in 1787 with 13 stars and stripes. And today, June 14, 2021, Old Glory proudly waves 50 stars and 13 stripes. 50 stars for each state, not the 57 states, and 13 stripes, one for each of the 13 colonies. So what a great day today is. Not only that, today is the 246th anniversary of the United States Army, founded back in 1775, June 14. They will defend. And the United States Army is 246 years old, and my pop proudly served in the United States Army in World War II, served in the Battle of the Bulge, was wounded in the Battle of the Bulge, has a Purple Heart. God bless him and every member of the United States Army and the United States military. And also significant today, June 14th, President Trump's birthday. So since Twitter has shut him down, we all should tweet out a happy birthday to President Trump and see if what happens with Jack, what's his name, if he suspends. So far, I'm still on Twitter, I think. I haven't been deprogrammed yet. Yeah, but President Trump's birthday today, so kind of cool.
75, I believe, correct?
I think you're right. Yes, 75. You know, isn't it interesting? Here it is, President Trump. The Democrat Communist Party created and manufactured a narrative questioning President Trump's mental stability. And it was just a manufactured lie. It was concocted by the Democrat Communist Party, facilitated by Hillary Rotten Clinton and Nancy Pelosi. And, of course, it was also the measure of the Democrat Communist Jerry Nadler. They tried to question the man's stability. In the meantime, we are witnessing exactly what they accused President Trump of with dictator Joe Biden. That mental midget is such an embarrassment, and now you understand why they keep his wife around so that she can direct him, because he is so out of it. And it's really sad, and as Hank Jones said, it's dangerous. It's dangerous in the sense that the man has no mental acuity. His mental stability is very, very suspect. His mental instability is very clear. And it's sad that this guy's been put on a world stage. And, of course, the media, the DNC media, has sanitized and covered for this man ever since 2020, when he was hiding in his basement running a fictitious presidential campaign. So it's, happy birthday to President Trump. He did have his mental faculties. He was very well attuned as to what was happening. So happy birthday, Mr. President. And Amen. One other note. Go ahead, Al.
Oh, no. I was just going to go back. No. Going about Trump, I wanted to say a couple words about the Army that you had mentioned earlier.
No, I'm done. I just want to wish President Trump a happy birthday. And of course, all social media has suspended this man, and it's turned out that what he said is absolutely coming true. So,
correct.
Go ahead.
Hydroxychloroquine. Ivermectin, all been acceptable, good for fighting the COVID. Correct.
Yeah.
Again, China virus, Wuhan virus, correct again. And now we're finding out that the election may have been stolen because we're getting tainted ballots in Arizona. Georgia is going to hopefully be auditing, and we'll see how all that turns out. And I can guarantee you that now whoever founded the Army way back in whatever date you said earlier must be turning in their grave with Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, because he's already ordered hundreds of Pentagon Advisory Board members to resign this month as part of a purge of the Army and review panels, purging several dozen if it were appointed last minute under the Trump administration, not to mention their open acceptance of transgender people in the Army and people who are going trans to have their medical procedures done within the scope of the military.
Great. Taxpayer funded.
What could possibly go right?
Exactly. I mean, oh my God, Biden is an absolute disaster. Hey, run with this for a second. I think we have our guest chimed in. So let me check it out, okay? Go ahead.
So during the last 2 months of his tenure, former Acting Defense Secretary Christopher Miller removed a number of longtime members from several defense policy, health, science, and business boards and replaced many with loyalists of former President Donald Trump. More than 30 of those replacements will now be forced to resign, including former GOP House Speaker. and Newt Gingrich, Brigadier General Anthony Tata. In other words, President Biden is purging the Army and purging the Army of patriots. If you are conservative, if you put up conservative posts on either your Facebook or your Twitter, you're going to be under suspect. You'll be labeled a KKK or white nationalist is the new word. And once you get labeled with that, then your career will likely be shot to hell. You'll be asked to leave the military, and it's going to take away some of our best people. But then, that is so bad. But let's say the options change. What's our other alternative? President Kamala Harris, she's next in line. I don't know which is worse, President Biden or Kamala Harris. Hopefully, yeah, we won't have to find out. But this is the world we live in. Welcome to it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of welcoming, we have a guest this evening, Mr. Todd Benzman, and I'm going to bring Todd right on and read a couple of things about Todd, and very impressed with his resume and his book so far. I just to get his book. Hey, Todd, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm going to read a quote from Steve Emerson, who wrote in your book. Todd is one of the last remaining authentic counterterrorism experts and investigators on jihadist terrorism. Todd is an author and speaker about the nexus between immigration and national security. He currently serves as the Texas-based senior national security fellow for the Center for Immigration Studies. And Todd frequently reports on this from the southern border in Mexico and Latin America. He holds an MA in Security Studies from Naval Postgraduate School, Center for Homeland Defense and Security. Todd also holds an MA in Journalism from the University of Missouri School of Journalism and an undergraduate degree in Journalism with honors from Northern Arizona University. Do you have any time? I mean, what? How do you make time there, Todd?
Oh man, it was rough. It was always rough. But I'm done with the schooling now. <At least.
laughs> You know, your book, America's Covert Border War: The Untold Story of the Nation's Battle to Prevent Jihadist Infiltration. I just got it. And thank you. I got it from Amazon, so thank you, Amazon, for delivering. It's really good, and I encourage our listeners and everybody out there to go out and get Todd's book. You can get it at Amazon.com, and I believe from your website as well. You wrote about the or actually you wrote a passage in an article that we read from Jihad Watch: Surge in Migrants from Muslim Terror Linked Nations by Paul Bedard. In your bio, it read that you were a journalist up until 2009 before joining the Texas Department of Public Safety. What was that trend? What made you change your career path, so to speak, from journalism to really public safety and counterterrorism?
Well, yeah, no. I appreciate you, first of all, buying the book on Amazon, and I hope you're enjoying it. The that transition. So yeah, I'm a trained journalist. That's my background. I worked 23 years, mostly large newspapers, the Dallas Morning News, Hearst newspapers, as a reporter, newspaper reporter. And you know, things were getting pretty tough in the journalism business. I was with Hearst, and I'm watching people all around me get laid off like flies, left and right, and it just so happened that right at about that time, the director of the Texas Department of Public Safety was appointed to head the agency, Governor Perry, and we knew each other he knew my work doing national security reporting, and he wanted to redo his intelligence division. He had built the FBI's intelligence division, and he was going to redo the Texas Department of Public Safety's division. And he recruited me in and said, how would you like to, you know, go into intelligence and do counterterrorism? And I was like, yeah, that sounds really, that just sounds really cool. You know, I've been doing it for 23 years, journalism for 23 years, and it's basically the same job. I mean, you're collecting information, and you're analyzing it, and you're presenting it to an audience. The audience is a little bit different, and some of the rules are a little bit different, and you have to have a security clearance and all that stuff, and you're working with law enforcement, but, you know, it's basically the same skill set. So I did that for 9 years up until 2018. I kind of went dark because intelligence people don't have social media and they don't write and speak or do anything like that. And then the Center for Immigration Studies in 2018 approached me and asked if I wanted to go and be a think tank guy. And I was like, yeah, sure. So that's kind of like one thing led to another. So I'm kind of back to writing and researching and publishing and that sort of thing.
You were on the ground in Bosnia. You're on the ground in the Middle East. Do you see any correlation? You know, at the border, the U.S.-Mexican border. You know, since you're in the Texas region, you also write about your extensive work at the U.S.-Mexican border. Is the border crisis for real? I mean, it's an elementary question, but can you put that to bed right now?
Oh, absolutely, 100% real. That thing is happening. It is collapsing. I go down there all the time. I watch it firsthand. So, yes, that is a big yes. It is in big trouble, and it's just going to get worse as we go along. We haven't even started yet. But the foreign correspondence that I did for those couple decades really sort of prepared me pretty well to do this kind of thing. So it's just kind of like returning to my roots, you know, going down there and on to Mexico. In fact, next week I'll be down in Costa Rica and Nicaragua to check out the border down there for about 10 days. So, and you can, I'll live tweet that as I go before I write my material up from that trip. That one has to do with a part of the border crisis that most Americans don't know anything about. Those people are called extracontinentals. They're from 100 different countries around the world are just surging through Panama from South America, carrying all these people from the Middle East and from you know, sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia and everywhere all around the world. 40,000 crossed the U.S. border just in May, which is a 700% increase. So I'm going to go back down there and report on that.
It's interesting you said that because in the article with Paul Bedard, there's a quote there, Biden's open border policies are attracting historic surge of potentially dangerous illegal immigrants. And you stated it's up 300 to 400%. Be prepared. They're coming. So who is there? Who are they that are coming that we should be prepared?
Well, these are going to be immigrants from places like Pakistan and Somalia, which are, you know, rife with terrorist organizations, Syria, Iraq, Iran, all of the countries that are, I think the American public is pretty familiar with in terms of terrorist organization activity. And beyond that, they're coming from sub-Saharan African countries where there are, atrocity-committing tribal militias, you know, rampaging in places like Congo and Cameroon.
Nigeria,
with Boko Haram up there. And the issue with those kind of immigrants is that they almost always show up at our southern border without any identification. And so we are at ground zero with those people. We don't know if they're the killers or the killed or the, you know, persecutors or the persecuted when they show up at the border. And the way things are right now, collapsing like they are with just regular Spanish-speaking immigrants from Central America and Haiti too, and Cuba, is that things are really stressed and collapsing. Our regular border control management systems are, you know, under extreme duress at the moment. And it's a terrible time for complete strangers from countries like that to be showing up. And it's very concerning. And I think the risks are elevated with all the different circumstances.
Well, that leads to this question. And in your, yes, it does, because in your interview with Mark Kerkorian, of the Center for Immigration Policy, you sort of ended your discussion that the overwhelming of the border is overwhelming the Border Patrol agents, and they're leaving, and it's all by design, or that is the intent to frustrate these Border Patrol agents so that they do leave, and now we've created yet another border crisis with Border Patrol agents leaving. I found your ending remarks very troubling, disconcerting, that this is what, you know, this is what is being seen at the border with Border Patrol agents. Is that true?
Yeah, what's happening in certain areas of the border, like kind of ground zero of the crisis, if people don't, it's kind of hard to explain this, but I'll make it simple. There are three demographics of illegals that are coming over. The first and the most that are allowed in are families, family units, moms, dads, pregnant women with young children. The Biden administration has told people who are in family units around the world that they will be let in if they show up illegally at the border, and they'll get legal documents and you know, welfare and benefits and bus tickets in and the whole bit. The other demographic are single adults. Huge. Those are by far the largest numbers. And the third one are, and the single adults are being pushed back into Mexico under this pandemic policy from the Trump era, which Biden kept, to kind of keep the detention centers clear of a bunch of COVID sick migrants, right? They didn't want to make incubators out of the detention centers. So they're still pushing back single adults who turn right around and try again and again and again. That takes up tremendous amounts of Border Patrol time and resources. So the single adults just trying over and over again, tens or hundreds of thousands of times. And the women and children who are coming over who need to be processed in by the tens of thousands. So those Border Patrol agents are mostly off the line, and there are huge gaps that are unpatrolled that are just left for the drug traffickers and for everybody else who wants to come and go over that border. The Border Patrol agents are trained to arrest, interdict, deport, deter, suppress, and instead they're babysitting and fetching diapers and bottled milk and stuff like that. So they're understandably upset. This isn't their job. They didn't train for any of this. And so when you talk to Border Patrol agents in the field, they're very demoralized, I guess that would be a way to say it. People just are looking for a way out, like, give me any other job. Same goes for ICE agents whose jobs have been completely gutted. There is almost no deportation happening in the country today. And, of course, the immigrants all know this. That's why they keep trying to get in, because once they get past, then they're just in. Nobody's ever going to deport them in this administration. And those ICE agents are just so demoralized. They have nothing to do. They're sitting around. You know, they just have no job to do anymore.
Oh, my God. So when the Biden-Harris team says that they inherited a mess at the border, they're not entirely honest on that, are they? It sounds like they created this.
Well,
mess.
They're just completely lying. That's just a made up, fabricated narrative that has absolutely no truth to it at all. The border had been as controlled and well managed by the last year of the Trump administration that I've seen it in a long, long time. Aspiring immigrants knew that let me just put it this way. This is the game. You're in Central America and you're going to invest thousands of dollars in smuggling fees. Before you invest $5,000, $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 in smuggling fees, you want to know that there's a very high probability that it's going to pay off with an entry, a successful permanent entry. And under the Trump administration, that possibility was very thin. You were going to get pushed back. You were going to be told to remain in Mexico. You couldn't apply for asylum. All these policies, you were going to get deported right back after spending $10,000. And that's the reason the Trump policies worked. It all comes down to that smuggling investment. And what the Biden administration did is they improved the odds that your investment was going to pay off, you know, by 90%, you know. So if you're in Vegas and you're trying to pick which table to gamble at, you know, you're going to go with the one that has these really super high odds of winning, right? That's what's going on right now at the border.
Oh, my God.
This
is unbelievable. I mean, and in just, what, 5 months, 6 months, they've turned the entire border into a nightmare. It's got to be driving you crazy.
Listen, I was down in, this was like in January of 2020. So think about what was happening there. We had the Democratic primaries, all those candidates. There were like 10 or 15 candidates back then. Kamala Harris was one of them. And I went down to southern Mexico and Guatemala, the border down there. It was Trump policies were in place. And the immigrants that I interviewed down there were telling me they're coming anyway. And they were going to just wait around in Mexico for a Democrat to win. They all were gambling that there was a 50% chance that Democrat was going to win, because during those debates, they were all competing with one another over who was going to be the most welcoming, who was going to break down ICE the quickest, who was going to end deportations the widest, who was going to give citizenship faster than anybody else, right? All those Democratic. And that's when it really started back in 2020. They started piling up in Mexico. And then when it got closer to the election and all the polls were showing Biden was going to win, remember that? 10%?
Yes.
They started surging and massing in northern Mexico and all these towns and cities just waiting for the election. And on the day after that election, it was just absolutely on. And the day after inauguration, they're following through on all the policies and letting everybody in. All the families started flooding in. So, I mean, the whole thing was just incited and conjured by the Biden administration even before the election, just by the words, and then they followed up by action. And, you know, all these immigrant families are, you know, taking selfies on the Texas side and sending them back home. We made it. They let us in. Here we are on the bus. So that just you know, puts a match under the fire there.
And in a time when Americans were locked down due to COVID-19 restrictions, it was almost like this administration, you know, that didn't matter at the border and transport the illegal immigrants anywhere throughout the United States, including all 50 states, they were busing them, from what I understand.
Yeah. In the beginning months, none of them were being COVID tested. The country was largely not inoculated yet either in January, February, March, April even. I think even now there's only about half of the country is inoculated. And they were letting those, thousands, tens of thousands of family units just pouring in over the border right onto these buses. They weren't testing any of them. Eventually, they started testing some of them. And I think now they're mostly testing all of them, thank God. But in the beginning, no, they were just, they were overwhelmed. They were just completely overrun. Nobody, even though it was predicted, I predicted in a column that this would happen, two columns. I was interviewing immigrants on the other side saying, Biden, we can't wait for Biden. We're coming in. We're going to make it. So, it was pretty predictable.
And in one of your articles that you wrote about the two Yemeni illegals that crossed over, Yemeni nationals, excuse me, that crossed over from Mexico into California, and they were captured. And within 24 hours of that news, the FBI and the news that they were on the FBI terrorism watch list and the no-fly list, that story was spiked and it was removed. You wrote about that. What is disturbing about that with regards to removing that story?
Well, for one thing, the liberal part of the U.S. spectrum, the Democrats and liberals wholly deny that there is any kind of a problem with terrorists or terrorist suspects crossing that border. So when CBP actually put out the press release, which I've never seen before, as an intelligence officer for years and years working on this, I knew that there was a lot of that sort of thing happening at the border. I was very well aware. I was directly involved in all of it when it was happening. So I knew that people like these Yemenis cross the border fairly often. But the American public doesn't know that. And I don't know if you remember, but about a year and a half ago, Donald Trump said terrorists were crossing the border and they were coming along behind these migrant caravans, and the entire national press institution of the press just about killed the guy over it. You're a liar.
Yes.
None of that's true. Remember that? It went on for
months.
Yes,
I do.
About 3 months. And so that's what the story, it's a taboo. The whole thing is just a taboo subject, that terrorists would cross the border. And in the larger American mind, it's not even true. It's a conspiracy theory, like a QAnon thing or something on the order of conspiracy theory that's related to Trump. And so when these two Yemenis came across and CBP put a press release out on it with their pictures and all the details about how one of them was hiding a SIM card in his shoe and was on the no-fly list, and all of that was very familiar to me, who'd been inside the counterterrorism game. But to the American public, during an immigration crisis where the border was collapsing, that absolutely could not be allowed to stand. And they took that press release down within 24 hours. It was gone. But when I saw it, I was reading it and I screenshotted the thing. I was like, this thing is going to be here for like five more minutes before they figure out what they've done. And, sure enough, by the time I woke up in the morning, somebody said, hey, it's gone. Somebody emailed me and said, hey, it's gone. But it's on the Internet Archives, the Wayback Machine, so you can still find it out there. And just a couple days ago, if I could just bring you up to speed, up to date.
Sure.
Of course, No major press outlet covered that story. There's two stories. One is two Yemenis on the FBI's terror watch list crossed, and the government admitted it and wrote about it in a press release. And B, two, they took it down. Why did they take it down? There are two separate stories there that are kind of intertwined. So nobody covered any of it. It was just a complete dead zone all the way up until this last week. And there's a congressman, a freshman congressman by the name of Tom Tiffany out of Wisconsin, who went down to Panama and wanted to see the Darien Gap and all of these extracontinental migrants coming through it. And he goes to Chris Wray, the FBI director, in a hearing like on Thursday, and he asked Chris Wray, he used his 5 minutes to ask Chris Wray about these two Yemenis. And Chris Wray admitted that the FBI does have an open investigation on this, hence we can't talk about it. And he, you know, talked a little bit more about the idea that terrorists could cross that border as something serious that they worry about. So I thought that, you know, just on Thursday, this whole thing kind of came back up again. But if you Google this around, I'm still the only one who has written anything about even that. Like, nobody wants to touch this thing with a 10-foot pole.
I can confirm that, Todd. I did Google it. And you know what? You're the only one that comes up with that. And I did find your article where you put the exchange between Representative Tiffany and Christopher Wray. And then on in your book, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Todd Bensman, in your book, America's Covert Border War, in Chapter 9, you talk about resurrecting aspects of Jay Johnson's 2016 counter-SIA initiatives. And the question that, or one of the statements put in there is, establish a single congressional oversight entity to ensure the border counterterrorism enterprise remains updated and impactful with clearly stated goals and annual outcome reports. And I got to thinking about what you just said about the denial from, one, the press in the United States, the DNC media, and Congress and members of Congress who excoriated President Trump for having the audacity to say that Islamic terrorists are coming through our southern border. So how effective can the United States House or a congressional oversight committee be in restoring what Jay Johnson put in place in 2016? Do you have any confidence that a congressional oversight committee can actually enforce or come up with some sort of updates that are impactful when they're denying that, in fact, the Islamic jihadists are coming across the southern border?
Yeah, well, so the issue there is I'm very cynical about that, about our Homeland Security enterprise and congressional oversight committees ever being preemptive on a threat issue. Because they just are. They're reactive. They tend to react. I'm also impressed that you read Chapter 9 too. but anyway, the one thing you mentioned there that I think is very interesting is that this issue really crosses the partisan divide, because you mentioned Jay Johnson.
Yes.
And Jay Johnson, as I write in extensively in Chapter 2, Obama's DHS appointee, a Democrat, to this day a Democrat, dyed-in-the-wool Democrat, when he was Secretary of DHS, became very concerned about terrorist infiltration, so concerned that he called together all of his top border chiefs in DHS and ordered that they evaluate the entire program of preventing infiltration over that border. And he wrote a memo, which I got my hands on and published in the book, where he said, we are going to fix this entire thing. We're going to figure out how to resource what we're doing, how to evaluate what we're doing, and we're going to have everybody, all the different agencies that are involved in preventing terrorist infiltration over the southern border. This was in 2016, in the waning days of the Obama administration. He was so worried about this that he wrote this memo. And that started a whole process, a ball rolling, to get these programs evaluated and resourced and fixed. And then Trump came in and everybody switched around and there's turnover and all the crazy, and it just nothing ever came of it. So this was a Democrat who was doing it at great political peril during a political campaign. Had that memo gotten out in 2016 during the when Trump was out there saying no Syrians will be resettled and all this, and all the Democrats were jumping all over him about that. I mean, right. It could have really been embarrassing for the Democrats, but he didn't care. I'm actually impressed by that. And I interviewed Jay Johnson for the book. He didn't want to be quoted, but I did interview him. And at the very least, he said I could let the memo speak for itself. That's in Chapter 2. Chapter 2 leads off with this memo. But yeah, that is my recommendation, is bring back the Jay Johnson. I don't care who came up with it. Bring back Jay Johnson's plan.
That's what I found. I found really good about your book. There's a Democrat, and you know, we have an issue. And in your first three or four chapters of the book, you talk about how the EU is experiencing issues with the Balkan route and Islamic jihadists going up the Balkan route and entering and melding in with the immigrants. And the migration issues that they're having from the same four countries, Pakistan, Syria, Iraq, and Yemen, and we're experiencing the same issues here in the United States now. The parallels are scary.
Right. Well, I start the book out with what happened to Europe in 2015 with their mass migration crisis, because that is a laboratory-worthy experiment. It's never happened. Border infiltration by Islamic terrorists on a significant scale happened to Europe. All of their marine and land borders were infiltrated on purpose by an organized terrorist group, ISIS. They did the Paris attacks and the Brussels attacks. And this has been almost completely ignored by think tanks and academia and journalists and politicians over there, and most certainly ignored over here. It was the leaderships of those European countries that had the exact same ideology that Joe Biden and the Biden people have about our border. Open it up. Let everybody in. And when they did, boy, you know, the terrorists came in with them. That was what Jay Johnson was seeing at the time he wrote his memo. And that's what I was seeing at the time I wrote my book. So it was nonstop terrorist infiltration in Europe to this day, 6 years of attacks, plots, bloody mayhem from one end of that continent to another. Just as recently as a month or two ago, they had a terror attack from guys that, you know, infiltrated over the borders posing as asylum seekers and war refugees and all that. And that's what it looks like. So my entire first chapter is involved with trying to show what happened in Europe. I don't think that what happened in Europe could happen in the United States on that scale, but every year we have, because almost all of those immigrants that came in were from Muslim-majority countries, whereas a small percentage, a tiny percentage of the ones coming over the southern border are from those Muslim-majority countries, maybe 3,000 to 4,000 a year apprehended. But every year, people like those two Yemenis are caught, thank God, by the covert border war programs that are described and revealed in the book. And I just think that that there's a denialism and a rejectionism about these programs that are going to hurt them, and that the book is a warning, like, hey, at least if you're going to open the borders wide and you don't care about any of this, just pay attention to that, at least that segment of illegal immigrant coming through.
But we have a media who's telling us that it's not true, and that's the disturbing part of it, and the way they excoriated President Trump for having the audacity to say that. Then you have terrorism scholars like to state number of Islamic jihadists is very low as compared to the number of Islamic terror attacks, and therefore it should not affect migration. So is America, if you raise these questions, you're considered an Islamophobe or a xenophobe? How do you combat that?
I mean, I've been called both over the years.
Really?
And,
surprising.
Yeah, but I mean, really, look, I haven't had anybody really attack the book frontally very much, because the book, I mean, just scroll through the back of the book. I mean, there are probably 500 citations in this book. It's about as well researched as you can get on this topic. And so it's pretty hard. I kind of feel like the book is bulletproof factually. It is what it is. I mean, the American Homeland Security establishment believes, even to Jay Johnson, believes that this is a threat. And even Alejandro Mayorkas acknowledged very recently that it was a threat and that terrorists are caught every year. He said it in a public hearing like in April. And he's a Democrat. He's Biden's guy, and he admitted it. I've got that somewhere, like on my YouTube channel. I found that nobody reported it at all. Not a lick of reporting that Mayorkas said terrorists are crossing the border. So now they're saying, there are people that are saying, well, okay, yeah, they are crossing. Okay, you got us, but they haven't attacked yet, and, you know, we're catching them. So what's the big deal? You know, so I find that progress. That's big progress.
Yeah.
That we've moved from you're a complete and total liar to, all right, it's happening, but it's no big deal. That's big. That's a big leap forward.
Yeah, it is. Your book is excellent thus far, and I encourage our listeners to go out and purchase it. America's Covert Border War, The Untold Story of the Nation's Battle to Prevent Jihadist Infiltration. Todd, I know you're limited on time, and I really do thank you for coming on this evening. And please be safe in your travels down to Panama and Nicaragua. And I really would like to have you back and talk about the Darien Gap and what your findings are down in Panama and Nicaragua.
Yeah, definitely. Give me a call. And, you know, I usually live tweet these trips, and people get a lot of entertainment out of my tweeting when I'm down on the border. So I'm at Bensman Todd on Twitter.
Okay.
And you can follow it. I send videos and photos out as I go. And then when I get back to a calm place, then I'll write and produce my report, my reportage.
Great.
No,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say after that, give me a call anytime. I'll come back on and talk about it.
Great. Paul Sutliff of the Sutliffia Report sends his regards as well. So,
Todd, this is Alan. Do you have a second for one quick question?
I've got a few minutes.
Okay, real quickly. Kamala Harris's trip to Ecuador, what's your take on that?
Yeah, well, as I write in the book, Ecuador is a very problematic country for terrorist infiltration and people smuggling from all over the world, because that government in 2008 eliminated all visa requirements. No visa required. You can just fly in on your passport, and they're like, we're all one world and one humanity and no nationalities. So everybody can come. And the day that they did that, human smugglers all over the world went, yay, and they started bringing everybody they could into Ecuador. The Americans then started seeing these huge influxes of Pakistanis and Iraqis, and this is back during the wars, you know, when we were had military over there, you know, and people were hating on us, had vendettas and revenge in mind, and we managed to get the Ecuadorians to put visa requirements on some of those nationalities, but a whole bunch of other nationalities were still left open. So the Trump administration went down there very quietly. To this day, I'm the only one who's reported on this. I've done two pieces about how the Trump administration went down and made the Ecuadorians slap visa requirements on Syrians and Iraqis and Congolese and Cameroonians and Ghana residents, et cetera, to kind of tamp down that terror threat. So my concern about Kamala Harris going down there is that they're going to look at her and the Biden people and just go, yeah, man, no more visas. We're out of that. Everybody gets to come back in, which is just going to heighten the number of people smuggling in through Ecuador. That's what they do. You know, they got to get over the Atlantic Ocean. And the best place to get over the Atlantic Ocean is to fly into Ecuador, because it's right down there by Colombia, right a hop, skip, and a jump from the Darien Gap. So Ecuador is a big problem. I can almost guarantee you that the Ecuadorians are looking at this administration and saying, yeah, man, we're tossing everything Trump told us to do.
Wow. Wow. So they knew Trump was serious, didn't they?
Yeah, the deal with Trump is if you're a country that's doing something that he doesn't want or like, he had a credible threat. You know, he'll wreck your economy. He'll pull all the aid. He'll, you know, mess up the pipeline deal or, you know, whatever it was. And he let you know. And those people understood that guy meant business, and they did what they were told on our national interest issues. And this is a great example of where we are now. On the day after Biden's inauguration, Mexico, they waited until that day to tell the Biden administration they would no longer accept families returned back under the pandemic rules. They just said, yep, okay, it's over today. And so the Biden administration said, oh, I guess we can't do anything about that. And so we've had like, you know, 100, 200,000 family units just pour over, just like pouring over the border, because those Mexicans don't respect this administration. They know there'll be no repercussions. So they just ended everything. They're telling us what we're going to do and who we're going to take. Whereas Trump would have just shut down all their trade and put progressive trade tariffs up to 28% on all their exports. And they knew he would.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of Ecuador.
Yeah, none of those people respect anything about this administration. The Guatemalan government, you know, to her face, you know, disputed Harris's narrative about climate change causing all this immigration. And he just said it straight. The president of Guatemala told her, no, you did this. You guys opened your border up and caused this. And he's right. They did. And everybody knows it. Listen, I spend a lot of time on the Mexican side, and I spend a lot of time with immigrants. And I interview them all the time, down as far back as the campaign in 2020. And it doesn't matter who you talk to. They're saying over and over and over again, we're coming because of the Biden people. They told us we could come. Shortly after the national election, about 400 Cubans stormed the bridge from Juarez to El Paso. Trump was still in office, so he put riot troops up there and beat them all back. But while they were being beaten back, they were all chanting, Biden, Biden, Biden. I mean, what else does anybody need to know? I think the immigrants themselves are the best possible primary sources about why this is happening.
So who's instructing these people? I mean, how are they getting this message that Biden is opening? Is it the governments themselves who are encouraging this, or
I've never met an immigrant who didn't have a smartphone. They all are plugged into social media, and they're all up and down the trail from the top at the U.S. border all the way back to home. They're live reporting, they're live tweeting, and they're plugged into the news cycles. So every time the Biden people come out and say something like, Biden held a big speech in front of Congress a month or two ago, and he said, "We will leave no child in Mexico." So, of course, the very next day, the smugglers were gathering up all the kids and arranging big child caravans up to the border, you know, dropping the kids off. Like, they listen. They watch the news, and they're not dumb.
No, they are not dumb. And our national security is in total jeopardy right now with what's happening, not just from the illegal, you know, migrants crossing, but also the jihadists that are emboldened by what's happening.
Well, that's my fear, is that, you know, ISIS-type groups in all these different countries are looking at this and putting together operations. And I really hope I'm wrong. I'll be very happy a year from now somebody listens to the recording of this thing and says, "Oh, my God, that guy, he was saying that they were doing operations or whatever." And I'll be very happy to hear that I was wrong about that. But at the moment, I mean, I'm looking at what happened in Europe, and those terrorist organizations know that what they did in Europe was very successful and effective, and they like to replicate what worked. Everybody likes to replicate what worked.
Well, in your book, America's Covert Border War, you document it very well. To me, the parallels between what's happening in Europe and what's happening in the United States is scary. It's spot on. I mean, you have pictures of men, you've Pakistani immigrants you've interviewed, Sikhs, in Guatemala, Costa Rica, Panama. I mean, you have done your due diligence on this, and the parallels of what happened in Europe and what's happening in the United States is so alike. It's just scary.
Right. And, you know, I don't pretend like this is the only problem at the border. All I argue is that this should be regarded as one of the threats down there at the border, along with drug trafficking and sex trafficking and money laundering and weapons, all of that. This one has been denied and rejected for years and years and years, and it's a completely true problem with actual Homeland Security professionals that work on it full time and are catching guys like those Yemenis all the time and dealing with it. Just like Ray said, Chris Ray, the other day in at the hearing, you know, we are worried about this, and, you know, there, we have an open investigation on that. My book describes exactly what the FBI is doing in a case like those two Yemenis and many others like them that are caught. So it is what it is. And, you know, even Mayorkas finally admitted it, just nobody's reporting on it. So, yes. You know, to that extent, I'm always very happy to own a great story all to myself.
Todd, why do you think that this goes unreported? I mean, is the media trying to sanitize the Biden administration's failure at the border? Or, I mean, we're talking about national security, and you list Yemen, Pakistan, Somalia, Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, Iran, and, you know, with a little bit of elbow grease, you can find you can find out what you found out, but it seems like the media just doesn't want to touch this at all.
I mean, the breadcrumbs are everywhere on this.
Yeah.
Thing. Court records, you name it. I mean, Janet Reno talked about it. I mean, I mean, there's congressional testimony where top DHS leaders are discussing this, and it's all out there. It just never gets reported. And my theory is the reason is that most of us in the journalism trade are pretty hard liberals. And we, as a group across the country, just don't want to report anything that would make it harder on immigrants than it already is. And the thing is if you acknowledge this as a baseline of truth, that there is this threat and it's real and people are coming through from places like this. One of them went to Edmonton, Canada, and did a double vehicle ramming carrying a ISIS flag. He came in through California. Nobody reported on it at all, just me. If they were to report that, then the government would have to respond with restrictive immigration policies, crackdowns at the border, blank checks for border walls and legislation. And, man, that's just completely the other way from liberal reporters. I mean, I was a reporter for 23 years, and everybody around me was a liberal, politically liberal, openly, everywhere I ever worked.
So what entry point to the United States do you feel are the most vulnerable or preferred for jihadists? Is it Texas, Arizona, California?
No, it could be anywhere. Those
anywhere.
Kind of immigrants, they're called special interest aliens or extracontinentals, or, you know, there's a variety of terms for it, government terms. But they come in different ways. They'll cross between ports of entry, you know, through the brush, people from those countries. And they'll also just very often come right up to a port of entry and declare asylum.
And this administration takes them, accepts them, I should say.
I think right now that if you're from Pakistan and you reach our border and you claim asylum, they probably will accept you in. I actually don't know right now, because it changes on a – with this administration, things are changing very rapidly. But even under the Trump administration, they were still exempting special interest aliens even from remain in Mexico. And I never understood that. I reported that the Trump administration is still letting all these people in and turning back the Central Americans, but letting in the Pakistanis and Iraqis. So, I mean, it's just, unfortunately, it may take blood in the streets to finally get this right, to finally, you know, put this in the front, on the front burner. And at least right now, you know, Mayorkas and Jay Johnson and others have started to say, and certain congressional members admit that it happens. That's the best you can hope for. Okay, they admit it happens, you know.
I got to give Representative Tiffany a lot of credit for taking his time to question, you know, FBI Director Wray, you know, to get to pin him down with regards to the two Yemenis that you captured.
Yeah, plus, I mean, Tiffany went down there without security. He just, a member of Congress, just went down to the Darien Gap jungle on his own dime because he just wanted to see what was actually happening down there on these routes. And he went deep into the jungle. I interviewed him when he got back, deep into the jungle, and met these immigrants himself, coming through, watched them coming through, heard their stories, and, you know, saw them just, you know, sick and coming in. So you got to give the guy credit for that. He's a freshman. He's only been in there for a little while. He's from Wisconsin. It's not even a border state. I said, well, how come in Wisconsin you're so worried about this? You're so far away. And he said something to the effect that, you know, southern border security is national security. It affects every state, all 50 states. And he's right. He's right.
Someone gets it.
Good on him.
Yeah. All right.
He got that.
Well, Todd, hey, you be safe in your travels to Panama and Nicaragua. We're going to follow you on Twitter, and I'll put your Twitter address in our chat room and our Facebook page so that people can follow you. And we really enjoy speaking with you this evening. And I urge our listeners to go and check out and get Todd Benzman's book, America's Covert Border War, The Untold Story of the Nation's Battle to Prevent Jihadist Infiltration. Todd, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Yep, thanks for having me. I appreciate the attention.
Oh, hey,
thank you, Todd. Great interview.
Yeah, you keep doing the work, Todd. This is fantastic. I have to give you so much credit, and we'll get the word out here on Global Patriot Radio.
Awesome, thank you.
All right, have a nice evening.
You have a great week. Wow.
Wow is right. That was, he said 30 minutes and he stayed on for almost an hour. You know, like he said, nobody's talking about it and he's the only one. And, you know, when you Google about the Yemeni border crossing, Todd's the only one that writes about it. He's got two stories on it. And I found it fascinating, you know, when it just in that article in Jihad Watch from Paul Bedard, titled Surge in Migrants from Muslim Terror-Linked Nations. Todd was quoted in there from the Center for Immigration Studies. And when you look at Mr. Benzman's resume, it is quite impressive. It really is. This guy goes everywhere. And, you know, Paul Sutliff had him on the Subpoena Report this past Thursday. You know, he's the only one talking about the border crisis, and he told it like it was as well, that this border crisis is a creation of the Biden administration. And I'm really surprised that, you know, he didn't pull any punches, and he was pretty candid in his views.
Well, he seems to deal in facts, evidence, and good research. He doesn't have to pull any punches. As he said, the book, his book is bulletproof.
Oh, his book is fantastic. I'll tell you, in reading his book, in the first three or four chapters, there are three countries that he speaks of: Syria, Yemen, and Iraq. And he mentions Pakistan, or as Obama says, Pakistan, as the three countries in which the Islamic jihadists who are sent in from ISIS infiltrate the EU, going up through the Balkan passage and the Balkan route. And these terrorists go into Germany, Brussels, Belgium, France, and the UK. Also, they make their way up to Finland, Sweden, and Norway. And the Nordic countries, Finland, Sweden, and Norway, are all passing stricter immigration laws as a result of this infiltration. And it's amazing because Todd is the only one that speaks about that. You know, he's the only one that's talking about how the Nordic countries have absolutely stricken, stricter immigration rules in place because of what the Islamists are doing in those three countries. Not to mention the Dutch, what they're doing in the Netherlands, and the strict immigration policies that they're passing, and even Germany now. And you know, what I found interesting, he said it was all by design. This infiltration is all by design. And he is so right. He is so right. There is nothing, there is a lack of assimilation from the Islamic world into the West. And I'm not putting any words in Todd's mouth. This is my own summation on this. There is nothing that ties the Islamic world to the West with regards to customs, with regards to assimilation, because they refuse to assimilate. And consequently, you get the beheadings in France. You get the killing spree in Paris. Brussels, the bombings in Brussels, the stabbing and the knife attacks in Germany, and the rapes in Germany and the UK. The grooming gangs, as they're called, they're nothing but rapists, Pakistani rapists, Muslim rapists in the UK. And, you know, at some point in time, you have to close the door. And Austria and Hungary did it. They closed the door, much to the chagrin of the European Union. And then, of course, with Brexit being passed, the UK is trying to stem the tide, and they're having a tough time over there doing so. And now you look at the parallels in the United States at our southern borders. You have two Yemeni nationals that are apprehended in California at the California-Mexican border, and it goes unreported. And then when a statement, a press release is released, it's squashed within 24 hours. Holy cow. His book is great. And it'd be interesting to follow him. And he goes in places, Al, that mm-hmm. I have to give him so much credit for going into these places.
Yeah, on the ground. But what do you do when our vice president goes to the tri-border area that has the largest population of Shia Muslims in the world other than Lebanon? She goes there and she's dictating to the people there, don't come. Just don't come. A bumper sticker, diplomacy. Meanwhile, what I found fascinating is that our guest, Todd, was saying that they just literally, everything that President Trump did to keep them in check from a free pass-through area back into our country, they have opened it up because they don't fear our government. They just walk all over us, much to our national security interest, which he even said, hey, I hope I'm wrong, but there's going to be an operation within the next year, maybe two. And he says, I hope I'm wrong, but right now I don't think so. That chilled me right down to my core.
You know, this is all the more reason that you look at President Trump and his term in office, and the only thing that President Trump was guilty of was being a champion for America. Here you have a situation with a border crisis, a potential border crisis during his administration, and what did President Trump do? He dropped the hammer. He was tough. He was tough on these nations like Ecuador, sending a team down, and his administration down, to quietly and to squash the immigration of Cameroon, Ghana, Syrians, Iraqis, and to require visas and instead of pulling it. And the Ecuadorians got the message because they didn't want the economic imposition on the part of the Trump administration. And Trump was tough. And it's no wonder the globalists in Washington, D.C. wanted him out because they didn't want this tough guy. They didn't want this tough pro-American agenda. I mean, this is insane what we're seeing today, and how they are intentionally demeaning and demoralizing our Border Patrol agents, overwhelming them. They'd be turning into babysitters rather than border enforcers like they should be. This is a sick agenda by this administration, and for Communist Kamala Harris to be slapped down by the Guatemalan president, well, it's climate change. You know, that is the biggest ruse that is being perpetrated on the American people. Climate change is causing this this border influx. Are you kidding? That is absolutely, it's not just disingenuous. It's a lie. It's a myth. It's an excuse. And it's a bad excuse. It's a bad excuse by the left-wing anti-Americans that are occupying Washington, D.C. right now. I mean, the reason for the border being overrun is because of climate change. That is absolute hogwash. What, I mean, talk about being insulting to each and every American. I mean, climate change is the cause?
Well, who benefits? With an open border, who are the beneficiaries?
Those that are in power in Washington, in my opinion, those that are currently in power in Washington, D.C. And I'll tell you, it is the reason why the Barack Hussein's, the Toro Obamas, the Hillary Rotten Clintons, the Nasty Pelosi's, all, all refer to the United States of America as what? As a democracy. They have an absolute disdain for our constitutional republic. And when they use the phrase rule of law, it's garbage. It's junk. It is just a window dressing meant to disarm the American people because they want to turn America into a banana republic. They have so much disdain for our constitutional republic, and they know that if they have an open society, a global society, that they will empower themselves in Washington, D.C. They will further enrich themselves like the Biden crime family has. And they will dismantle our constitutional republic. I mean, just look at the first two amendments of the Bill of Rights and how this administration, the Biden-Harris communist administration, has abridged all five components of the First Amendment: freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom to peaceably assemble, freedom to redress the government for grievances, and freedom of the press. And look how they're trying to abridge the Second Amendment, so much so that even a federal judge slapped down the Biden administration and says the right to bear arms shall not be infringed. And it took a federal judge to slap down this anti-constitutional administration. So those that are currently in Washington, D.C. on both sides of the political aisle, okay, who have self-enriched themselves, the Dianne Feinsteins who have been in government for the last 40 years, the same with Chuck Schumer, McConnell. Look at both sides of the aisle. There are a few that are stepping outside the box, like Representative Tiffany from Wisconsin, Tom Tiffany from Wisconsin. He may not be long for the Republican Party, just because of opening this little Pandora's box. So who's going to jump on this now? So that's my oration. What do you think, Al?
Yeah.
What's your opinion?
I agree with you 100%. And who are the beneficiaries of massive immigration? That would be the Marxists. As you said, what better way to destroy our republic than to have massive illegal immigration come into our country for the benefit of bringing in more and more voters who will more than likely vote Democrat and then scatter them throughout the country, and then they'll melt into the fabric of our culture and get lost, and then they'll vote, and they'll likely vote Democrat and vote Democrat again and again wherever they are. Perhaps they're even moving them to the more conservative states in order to push the Democrat majorities in these states. So if you want to destroy our republic, a sure as heck good way to do it is through massive immigration. And that's who I see are the beneficiaries of this one, what I consider a national security issue. Others see it as a Marxist growing must do on the checkoff list for communism and Marxism in America.
Well, you know, and Todd stated, you know, he was surrounded by pretty hardcore liberals in the media back when he was in the media, Dallas Morning News, and and that should be pretty telling as well, because it was Trump was bad, and they were coming up with all kinds of excuses to slam President Trump, including, as Todd said, when President Trump said that Islamic jihadists are crossing our southern border, they told the American people that was fictitious. That was a lie. And you know, what's interesting is back in 2008, when we were on terrestrial radio, we also reported about the number of prayer rugs and Korans that were acquired at the border that were left behind by illegal immigrants coming across the border. And then fast forward 10 years later, the same problem existed, and then the media went out to make sure that they were to denigrate President Trump. And again, it was, he's got a mental issue, his mental capacity. It was the lies that were coordinated. And in the meantime, we have a man who is president of the United States right now, who has the mental acuity of a midget. He is out of it, and he's an embarrassment. And as Hank said, he's dangerous. It's dangerous for the fact that this guy doesn't have the mental acuity, the mental awareness. And we need – what we need is someone to step up and say enough is enough. And, you know, our borders are important to our sovereignty. Our borders are important for our republic. And we're not just a democracy. We are a constitutional republic. And the fact is that the powers to be, like the Barack Hussein, Satoru Obamas, the nasty Pelosi's, the Hillary Rotten Clintons, all are making sure that they condition Americans into thinking that we are just a simple democracy. And that's why they want the Electoral College gone. That's why they want the open border globalist mentality. They are anti-constitutionalists. And frankly, they're anti-American. And, you know, the only thing that President Trump was guilty of was being pro-American. You know, strong-arming the Ecuadorians, you will do this. Making sure the Mexicans follow through in securing their borders so that the American borders were secure. Okay? National security is extremely important. And the globalists didn't like that approach.
Well, Chris Kassler with the Legal Immigrants for America wrote a very interesting piece on nullification, where states will nullify federal directives if it violates our Constitution. Now, what that means, it wouldn't be on a national scale, he was saying. It'd be more state to state. So let's say with the immigration issue in the immigrant state, Arizona, New Mexico, the federal government is not there to help. It actually hinders states from stopping illegal aliens from entering their state to wreak havoc and create crimes. So what the states would do is they would use the nullification process, which is constitutional, to go ahead and protect their borders on their own, regardless of federal policy. Now, what that would do and what makes that so interesting, it would act like a release on a pressure cooker to let some of the steam off, because the last thing we want to do is have this openly destroy our republic. But if each state, two or three states, say no, they say nullification against the federal government, and then they protect their borders, then that would release some of this pressure on this immigration issue. And I sincerely see that as the one solution to this, because we've identified the problem, I believe. Todd has identified the problem, our guest, eloquently. And now, what is the solution? And I see that the state-by-state nullification may be our only avenue going forward.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because I had a discussion with Belly, and he did put it in the chat room, a big fat soft underbelly, with regards to his concern was seeing that Aeromexico, Avianca Airlines, Volaris Airlines, they're flying into Bush International or Intercontinental Airport, and the planes are full of these immigrants. The planes are full. And are these people vaccinated? Probably not. They're supposed to be, but you're coming from all the Central and South American countries, and these planes are full coming in. Passenger list, what, 150 to 250 passengers, and are they going back to their countries? And who's monitoring these people when they get off the plane? The other part is, if they're flying in to Bush Intercontinental Airport, that means they're flying into Newark Airport, LaGuardia, they're flying into Kennedy, they're flying into San Francisco Airport, they're flying into Minneapolis Airport, they're flying into Detroit Airport, they're flying into Miami. We have the border surges at the southern borders, Arizona, California, and Texas. Now we have airport surges. And then we have a surge by this administration, the bumbling Biden and Harris administration, who in the dead of night are sending illegal migrants, illegal aliens, busing them to all points of of states in the United States, and we have no idea if these migrants these illegal migrants are carrying the Chinese virus and if they've been vaccinated. When you have an administration that's facilitating this type of national security risk, we should be very concerned, because you have the administration, the government has confined the American people. They have placed us in our homes. You know, we limited travel. We have to wear masks everywhere. You have to get inoculated, and you have to show your vaccine passport. You have to make sure you've got the Chinese virus. We're going to do away with all HIPAA privacy laws now in the name of a pandemic. Have you gotten your Chinese virus vaccine? There's a hospital in Houston, I believe it is, that's not going to allow their employees in if they've not been vaccinated with the Chinese virus vaccine. So all HIPAA privacy laws go out the door. And we have a government now that is abridging our freedoms and our liberties, and yet they're transporting and they're repatriating illegal aliens who are infected with the Chinese virus around all 50 states in the dead of night. And I understand that in Florida, Governor DeSantis rejected something in Orange County. There's a convention center in Orange County that was going to be used as a housing center for illegal immigrants, and Governor DeSantis nixed it. And so kudos to Governor DeSantis. That guy's got big cojones. So does, you know, and Abbott's going to have a little bit of an issue, obviously, in Texas. He's having some issues. Governor Kristi Noem also having, you know, she's not having any of this from the federal government. So we have a real problem right now. And we are at a crossroads in this country. We have the Marxists who are trying to change America, dismantle our constitutional republic, and we have some governors and some lawmakers who are pushing back against this anti-constitutional belief system.
Yep. So what do? How do we fight back? I guess we just fight back.
We just fight back.
And we,
you know,
yeah, we
state
by
state.
You put the stories up on your social media, you put it on your Twitter, your Instagram, and you do whatever it is you can do within your sphere of influence, no matter how small you think it is. In fact, you do so much as you go to your local SecRecs, your Republican Executive Committee, and sign up to be a committee man. It's not going to take you a whole lot of time. You get involved. There's really no excuse not to. You have to do it now more than ever.
And
if everybody does what they can do, if everybody does what they can do within their sphere of influence, no matter how big or small, then the job will get done.
Yes, it will.
Little Pollyannish and naive, perhaps, but I'm okay with that.
No, it's not Pollyannish, and it's not naivety. It's about getting involved, because what's happened is that we've had the Democrat Communist Party in America has conditioned people to think that elections are over, you know, conditioned to think that with all the fraud and the cheating that it did not happen, including the Boston Globe, you know, having a front page article a couple of days ago saying Bush's false claims of impropriety in elections. I mean, this is how it's still where the left-wing media, the DNC media, is making sure they condition people to think their way, okay? But Trump was right, and Trump is being proven right. So what you have to do is you have to follow, okay, journalists like Todd Benzman. Go to toddbenzman.com. Go to his Twitter feed, okay? Follow him. If you want to get the real story, okay, and not from the DNC media, then you need to follow guys like, or people like Todd Benzman, at BENSMAN, Todd, TODD, on Twitter. Follow Todd, okay? Get his book, America's Covert Border War. Go to the Center for Immigration Policy. Follow the Center for Immigration Policy. Mark Krikorian. Excellent. He does excellent work, Mark Krikorian. Okay. It's time that Americans get engaged. Okay. Well, I'm not going to vote anymore. It is exactly what the Democrat Communist Party wanted. They want to frustrate you. If you don't vote, their base votes. And we get more of this Marxist communist belief system. okay? We get more of the Black Lives Matters. Look what's happening now with regards to the Black Lives Matters. You have African Americans in the United States who aren't taking it anymore, and they're stepping outside the box to the point where Candace Owens is becoming more influential than the Reverend Fraud Sharpton, okay? So, you know, people are starting to understand that this is our government, okay? We're being abused, we're being used, and we're being lied to. And, you know, when dictator Joe Biden says America is back, yeah, America is back to mediocrity. America is back to the same old failed liberal policies, the same old high taxes, okay? We're going to tax corporations. You know, they come up with these fictitious numbers, $400,000 a year. Oh, that's Joe's narrative now. If you make less than $400,000 a year, you won't be taxed. Really, Joe? I just spent $2.92 a gallon for gasoline. Okay, it just cost me an additional $12 to fill up my truck and my vehicle. That's $50 a month. Okay, so people are starting to drive less now. What? Why? Because they can't afford. Okay, it's coming right out of their household budgets. Oh, but you're not going to be taxed any higher. That's garbage. And then you've got the Green New Deal, which is another ruse, just like Communist Kamala going to Guatemala and talking about climate change being the reason for the surge of migrants. That is absolute horseshit. She is absolutely lying, but that is the Democrat Communist Party. And as long as they can continue to condition you and me into thinking their way, okay, we won't have a voice. Well, you know what? 245 years ago, there were some people who had some voices. And they created a great country, and they fought for the freedoms and liberties that we enjoy today. Today is Flag Day. Be proud of America. Be proud of the 50 stars that are on that flag. Be proud of the 13 stripes that are on that flag, because it signifies our birth as a colony, our birth as a nation. And it's time to reject this Marxism, this communism, this anti-American, this anti-constitutional belief system that's coming out of Washington, D.C., and from both sides of the political aisle. And I'll tell you, when we talk about both sides of the political aisle, when I read Chapter 9 of Todd's book, America's Covert Border War, I really was stunned about him quoting Jay Johnson. Because I really was suspect that any type of border security was even on the minds of the Barack Hussein's Toro Obama administration. But there are some people who actually have a conscience, and Jay Johnson does have a conscience. And so I applaud Todd for putting that in his book, because it's not about a Republicanism. It's not about being a Democrat. It's about America. And that's one thing that Donald Trump cared about, was America. And now we have it verified by Todd that President Trump sent a team down to Ecuador to change their migration policy. And he dropped the hammer on Ecuador and the Ecuadorian government and said, you will do this. You will stop the Syrians from coming in. You will stop the Guatemalans. You will stop the Cameroonians. I mean, it's about protecting America. It's about protecting our sovereignty. I mean, why in the hell did we fight World War II, for Christ's sake? Huh? Why? We fought back this despotic, you know, lunatic called Adolf Hitler, who wanted to take over the world. We have to go through this every 50 years, every 100 years? And we get these two buffoons in Washington, D.C. Well, climate change was the cause for the surge of the migrants coming across the border. That is such a lie. I mean, hey, one other thing that I found that on Todd Benzman's site, which was interesting, was Minnesota military linguist ensnared in honeypot abandoned her country for Hezbollah. And, you know, this is the type of homeland security the counterterrorism reports you're going to read by Todd. And Todd does a great job. You know, when Defense Department Arabic linguist Miriam Taha Thompson's love affair abruptly ended with her arrest last year, her own hurt feelings paled in comparison to other damage it wrought. The Rochester, Minnesota widow's romance placed the lives of real American soldiers and intelligent informants in harm's way, disrupted U.S. military operations, and betrayed her nation's deepest trust. And so here, again, great story, the honeypot spy trap, the acolytes of the Lebanese Hezbollah. You've got an American that committed treason. These are the things that you won't read in the New York Times, the Boston Globe, the Washington, you might read it in Washington Examiner, although they haven't covered any of this as well. But, you know, this is, we have to secure our borders. We have to know what's going on. It's truly incredible what we're seeing.
Well, there is a big problem with translators that are coming over. In fact, in Afghanistan right now, there's a push to bring over as many translators as possible because they know that once the Americans leave, that these translators are likely to be murdered by the Al-Qaeda and the ISIS that are going to fill the vacuum when we leave. However, we don't know how many of these translators are actual double agents, spies, jihadis.
Yeah. Correct.
So we bring them over, and now we've got these jihadis who can speak both languages fluently, and will have an open place within the military and the protection from the military. In fact, they even have a dopey show now on TV where an Afghani translator comes back, and now they have a sitcom about it.
Yes.
And it's a little wussy Afghani guy. You almost think he's gay, quite frankly. But here he is.
There's anything wrong with that.
For an army guy, and then he moves in with them in their house, and he becomes the translator who becomes the center of the family, from what it looked like from all the trailers and whatnot. And he becomes the center of the family, and he translates between the husband and the wife, the husband and the kids, the mother and the kids, and he becomes the center of the family. And it's all cute and fun, I guess, if you like that kind of entertainment. But the social conditioning of a show like that and the timing of it, to me, is very interesting. Because this policy is extremely dangerous and wrought with national security risks. And then here you are, you have Hollywood putting out a show with this that frankly sucks. It sucks because it's not even funny and the writing is horrible. But the product sucks, yet it's still on prime time. Now, is that show subliminally social conditioning us to accept these Afghani interpreters because they're all going to be cute little nebbishy, gay Afghani guys that mean no harm and just want to help the American family?
Hey, it's all about,
I think it's a big deal.
It is.
Maybe I
think,
well,
it is.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal.
You raise a good point, okay? And the word that we have here today and the word going forward is conditioning. We have a Marxist movement that is conditioning people to think their way. And you have a woke culture now. Everything is bad. Our history is bad. And the woke culture is conditioning us to believe that America is racist, that America is xenophobic, and America is Islamophobic, when in fact, all we're trying to do is protect our country, protect our sovereignty. It is absolutely real that Islamic jihadists are crossing the U.S.-Mexican border. It is absolutely real that Islamic jihadists are crossing the borders from Greece into the rest of the European Union. It is true. It is true that Islamic jihadists want to kill the infidel. It is true. It's happening right now. It's happening in France. It's happening in Germany. It's happening in the UK. These aren't just isolated incidents. And now we have an issue here in the United States. The same thing is happening. You know, whether the Islamic jihadists are being harbored in Islamic enclaves like in Minnesota or in Detroit? We don't know. But, you know, we just had, what, June 12th was the, was it the fifth anniversary of the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando, Florida?
That was
an Islamic jihadist. Actually, it was what, someone who was born in Afghanistan and then they, and the parents migrated to the United States, where it's not even acknowledged that he was an Islamic jihadist. And yet this is an Islamic jihadist who carried out in the name of ISIS, a terrorist attack that killed 49 innocent people. And today it was a mass shooting. Nothing mentioned about Islamic Jihad.
Yep, all the media is, they're whitewashing this Omar Mateen. The LGBTQ mafia, yes, and I use the word mafia because they have hijacked this Pulse shooting and changed the narrative to make it about gay and lesbian issues and that they were direct targets of mass murder because they are gay and just gay, LGBTQ, when that's not even the case. Because during a 911 call, Omar Mateen said, and he said point blank, on the 911 call when he is inside the Pulse shooting up these innocent people, when he's ankle deep in blood, he's on 911 telling the 911 dispatcher that he's part of ISIS and he's pledged allegiance to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. And this is all on the 911 tape during the trial, Vito, and you know this well, is that during the trial they did a pinging of his cell phone, Omar Mateen, the shooter. During the pinging investigation, it showed that Omar Mateen had never been to the Pulse nightclub in his life. There was part of the gay community who told the local paper, which spun it out to the rest of the nation, that Omar Mateen had gone to the Pulse nightclub and was having identity issues, meaning that
sexual.
He was there scoping out the Pulse nightclub, but he was also having issues with his sexuality and may have been having an affair with somebody at the club, saying that he was gay. It ended up being a total, flat-out lie. Total lie. Because this guy had never been there before. It was a soft target. His original target was Disney, part of Disney World. But the security there was too tight, so he came and then was driving, saw the nightclub and said, okay, this is it, time to go. And he did. But you're not seeing this anywhere in the press. It's all about the gay issue. And it's profoundly dangerous, it's profoundly despicable and disgusting that our media would do this and change the whole narrative. And why? Who benefits from this horrible reporting?
Well, that's just it. It's conditioning the American people into believing or into sanitizing the real issue. One of the worst massacres in U.S. history, aside from 9/11, 2001, which was also perpetrated by 19 Muslim men, is the fact that an Islamic jihadist walks into a gay nightclub. And we know the homosexual phobia that the Islamic world has. I mean, when Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in Iran stated that they don't have a problem with homosexuality in Iran, and they don't, because when they accuse a male of homosexuality, they hang him and they leave his body hanging in a public square by his neck on a crane. And we have, you know, you have Omar Mateen, and you attended the wife's trial, so you've got some information that is not out to the public and is being sanitized by the media. The issue was an Islamic jihadist walked into a gay nightclub and tried to inflict as much fear and death upon the patrons in that in that bar, in that nightclub. And that is the narrative. It was an Islamic Jihad attack. And 5 years later, it's still in denial, and that, not the river. It's still in denial. And that is the, that's how disingenuous this whole movement is, and the lies that are emanating out from the media.
Right. Now here's the 911 call. He is making this call. I'm reading straight from the source. He's making this call as he takes a brief break and shooting innocent people, just executing them on site. And the 911 call made shortly after the shooting began, Omar Mateen swore allegiance to the leader of the Islamic State of Iraq in the Levant, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, and said the U.S. killing of Abu Wahib in Iraq the previous month triggered the shooting. He later told a negotiator he was, quote, out here right now because of the American-led interventions in Iraq and Syria, and that the negotiator should tell the United States to stop the bombing. The incident was deemed a terrorist attack by FBI investigators. Boom. That's it.
Boom.
That is the facts. That is the evidence from the shooter himself. But that's not what's being reported. And, you know, shame on the LGBTQ mafia for hijacking this event, this horrible, horrible terrorist attack, the largest terrorist attack, ISIS attack on U.S. soil since 9/11, the first ISIS attack on our country, really, and then stealing it to get sympathy and to advance the gay agenda. There's nothing to me personally more disgusting than that, and I blame the media, and I blame the LGBTQ leaders, that whenever the truth comes out, they destroy the person who says it by calling them an Islamophobe.
Yep.
Shame on Imam Muhammad Musri for backing this, because he knows what the truth is, but he's backing the gay agenda to deflect from where the actual problem is. There's a lot at play here, and this is just one data point in what we're seeing. We're seeing it at the immigration boards. We're trying to tie this all into one nice canvas to make it easier to see, because there's so many different things happening in so many different areas, whether it be immigration, national security, agriculture. I mean, you name it. There are adversaries at every juncture, and we all have certain – we're all called to certain types of events or actions that hit us right at our core. But all these little points that are being hit by the same people, and it is the Marxists.
100% right, man. 100% right. And you know, we sit here, and it's not. It's not an issue of bashing. You know, I'm really enjoying the read Todd Benzman's book, because you start to see the parallels between what Europe is going through or has experienced and what potentially is the issue in the United States. You know, from the Farouk and Tafin couple in San Bernardino, California, that killed 14 people. 14 fellow workers, to the Pulse nightclub, you know, to, you know, 9/11, all of this ties in together, and America is not immune from this. And if we have this type of lax security, this potentially dangerous open border mentality, just to kind of wreck our constitutional republic, we should be really concerned. And people like Todd Benzman, you need to get to know who this gentleman is and his writings, and to know that he doesn't have an agenda. The guy's just telling the truth, and he's one of the few that's getting the message out there. And we need to be aware of what's out there. Also, Jihad Watch, really quick, and we have about 9 minutes left. This story is really troubling and it's disturbing. It's about it's a horrible woman. Okay, so there's a commencement speech made by a woman from the Dar al-Hijra Mosque in Falls Church, Virginia. And this woman, okay, Abrar Omesh, tells the students, the high school grads, that they're entering a world of capitalism and white supremacy, and America is racist. And here's her quote. A school board member gave a graduation speech in which she told a mainly immigrant class of high schoolers that they were entering a world filled with racism, extreme versions of individualism and capitalism, ooh, and white supremacy, and encouraged them to remember their jihad and reject the concepts of objectivity and neutrality. Now, you read this article, and then you remember about just 2 weeks ago, a valedictorian in Michigan, her speech was nixed because in her speech she wrote how she was going to thank her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and they told her she couldn't say that. Now we have this extreme anti-American, hate-filled speech at a graduation where she calls the United States of America racist. And capitalism is bad, and this is what a devout fundamental Muslim believes, that America is bad because of capitalism. Capitalism and free enterprise is what built this great country. And if this person, Abrar Omesh, can't assimilate into America, she's got no place in making such extreme and radical statements and inciting to violence. We should be very concerned when you have a devout fundamentalist who states that they are entering a world filled with racism, extreme versions of individualism and capitalism and white supremacy, and encourage them to remember their jihad. Because a devout fundamental Muslim understands that under Islamic law that's codified by the Quran, page 599 of Reliance of the Traveler, Umdat Salik, it states that jihad means to war against non-Muslims. Now, was this official, was this person a member of the school board, okay, in Falls Church, Virginia, was she inciting to violence? A Fairfax County school board member, Abra Omesh, encourages the students to remember their jihad. Jihad means to war against non-Muslims. It's codified by three verses of the Quran, page 599. Jihad, to war against non-Muslims. That's how simple that terminology is. That's how simple that phrase is. Is this what it's coming down to? Using the First Amendment in the United States to destroy the First Amendment? This person should be investigated by the Secret Service, by the FBI, and if it's found that she has incited to violence, she should be subjected to Gitmo. I mean, this is absolutely incredible that this is even tolerated by the Fairfax County School Board. This type of radicalism, this type of extremism now is being told to our students at graduation, and you have a valedictorian who is thanking Jesus Christ for giving her the abilities and the powers, and thanking Christ for guiding her, and that is revoked and rebuked by a school board, and yet this anti-American radical extremism is accepted by the Fairfax County School Board. That is absolutely sick. That is sick. I mean, you want to talk about an anti-American liar and inciting and fomenting hate in America? This type of extremism should be rejected, especially when foreign nationals who reject our constitutional republic form of government are opposed to their belief system, because they believe that America should be a Sharia compliant belief system. Well, you know what? Capitalism is good. Free enterprise is good. Free enterprise and capitalism are what makes America great. And if you don't like it, you're free to leave.
Amen.
But amen is right. Oh my God! I know we don't have much time left, but this is just absolutely incredible that the Fairfax County School Board would even tolerate this type of extremism. So, look, we got about 4 minutes left. I want to thank Todd Benjamin again. Please go to Amazon.com or ToddBenjamin.com and get his book, America's Covert Border War, The Untold Story of the Nation's Battle to Prevent Jihadist Infiltration. Follow Todd on Twitter at Benjamin Todd, B-E-N-S-M-A-N, Todd, T-O-D-D. Go to his website, ToddBenjamin.com. What a great interview. The man has put a lot of work into his craft, and he's done a very good job. We got to be more vigilant and aware of our surroundings. And so, Al, any parting shots?
Adios, amigos.
Well, tomorrow night, we've got Eric from Kafiristan with Radio Free Kafiristan. Wednesday, we got Hank Jones with Poly Sports. Thursday, you got Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. Friday, you got Andrew Harrod, Islam in Focus. He's on, I believe, at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on Friday morning. And Saturday, we have Minister Simon Dakduk and the beautiful Christy revealing the truth about Islam. He's on at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And here's a man who is stalked and bullied by members of Hamas Care for just speaking the truth. And then Sunday, Eric from Kafiristan is back with his interfaith dialogue, the real interfaith dialogue, which he simulcast right here at 2 o'clock p.m. On Sundays. And Monday, Al and I will be back at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Some other shows to listen to. We've got Chief, Simple Facts of Life, and Chief is responsible for that Vito intro, which is great. I love it. I think it's fantastic. But he's on Tuesdays, 3 p.m. Pacific Time on Blog Talk Radio, which is 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And then we've got the Simone Nicole Show on Spreaker on Wednesday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. If you want a break from politics and a little self-help, dieting, exercising, did you exercise today? I recommend the Simone Nicole Show. It's really good. The music is a little bit suspect on there, but what can you expect from somebody from down under? Next Monday, Alan, I'll be back at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter, #Brown G Patriot Radio, #Brown Mama Mia No Sharia. Al, any parting shots?
So long.
Hey, okay, so I want to thank Bigfoot's Place, www.bigfootsplace.blogspot.com. Bring it on, Boy Ducky Northwest, Hank Jones of Poly Sports, iGuy 1958, OBFSU on Big Fat Soft Underbelly, Paul Sutliff of the Sutliffian Report, Chief Southern Sense Talk Radio, that's Annie. Hey, check out Annie's show, Tuesdays and Fridays, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio, and we have the beautiful Sue from New Mexico who's listening on the switchboard, and of course we had Moving Forward was on. And Iggy Mom was in the house earlier, too. So hello to both of them. Thank you all for joining us. And you all be safe out there. Be aware of your surroundings. And God bless you guys. Good night, folks.
Number.
Oh, look at that. Right on the numbers. Right.
God,
man, we got
mad skills.
I'm telling you, I can read. I can. That was a public education. PS 42. Wasn't sure I was going to make it.
Well,
it was
a hell of a great interview.
Yeah, thanks. What a great guest. Oh, my goodness. I am so impressed with him. It is incredible. I mean, just reading this last week, just reading his articles and reading his book.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten through the whole book, but reading his book is amazing. It's amazing. I mean, first of all, he gets it. Second of all, he's not pulling any punches. And it's something that, you know, we as adults should actually tolerate, not this woke culture and not this sanitizing of history, but there are facts here. And this man has been through all points in the world, including the war in Bosnia in 1990, 1991. And, you know, what's impactful about that is having been to Dubrovnik, and you walk into the Dubrovnik, the old village, and you walk into a room that's just dedicated as a memorial to the members or the residents of Dubrovnik who fought in the Bosnian War and died. And you realize that this was 1991, 92. I mean, it was just like right around the corner. It was just happened. And, you know, he was there in Bosnia. He was there in the Middle East. He's at the border. This guy goes into the border region. Doesn't just visit them. He actually embeds himself and he speaks to people in Costa Rica, in Panama. He speaks to illegal migrants, to these illegal immigrants who are trying to come into the United States. He actually talks to them. So he gets firsthand information. And it's not climate change that's driving these people into the United States border. Oh, my God.
I don't know. I was told today it was climate change. I swear there was a story, climate change driving migrants to the border.
God almighty. That is such, you know, it's buffoonery. And for these people to even to utter it, for one thing, I don't believe they believe this. There's no way, shape, or form they're going to believe that nonsense. And it's utter hogwash. It's utter hogwash that it's climate change. And what a sad excuse for a pathetic bunch who are nothing but snake oil salesmen who are seeking to rape the American taxpayer coffers for their climate ruse, to blame climate change. That is so bad. I mean, they created this mess at the border. They created it. And then they sit there and they go with the narrative that they inherited this mess, which is a flat-out total lie. And then when they get caught with a lie, they come up with yet another lie, and now they're trying to sell their climate change package, which is also a scam. It's a ruse. And they want us to believe now that it's climate change that's driving, you know, a mass illegal immigration into the United States. I mean, Al, I think they really do believe the American people are stupid, or they're conditioning Americans in such a way that we'll just be very passive and we'll just let people come in, you know, because of climate change. Like in the wintertime, it gets cold. And then in April, the climate changes again where it gets warm, although in Little Falls, it wasn't until, you know, May 30th, where it got warm. And then guess what? In September, the climate changes again. It starts getting cool. What a ruse. It's a hoax.
I don't think it matters. I mean, you remember when AOC came out with the Green New Deal? And we thought, oh, this is so way out there. It was so wacky. It was so, stupid.
Right.
And it was a joke. We're like, oh, this will never happen in a million years. This is too much. This is beyond. Nobody will fall for this. And then here we are, what, 2 years later? And now it's actually being implemented?
Yeah. Yeah.
I never saw that coming. How do we go from total craziness to let's implement this reckless type of environmental policy, which is nothing really but moving wealth from one group of people to another. Not to our advantage, and yet it went through.
It's fitting that you asked that question on Donald Trump's birthday. To me, it was just a really well-orchestrated, coordinated effort to get rid of Donald Trump because he – and you know what? What else? He was the obstacle for these left-wing – anti-Americans, anti-constitutionals to implement their policies. It is the destructive Democrat Communist Party that is seeking to dismantle our constitutional republic, and they had to get rid of Donald Trump. And what impressed me about Todd Benzman is when he talked about President Trump sending a team down to Ecuador, and I had no idea about Ecuador's policy change in 2008 where they didn't require any visas or passports, so anybody and everybody could just, you know, migrate down to Ecuador. But President Trump put a stop to that and quietly, you know, put the kibosh on Cameroonians, Ghanaians, and Syrians, as well as Iraqis and Iranians, and Ecuador got the message. And Ecuador did their part, as did the Mexicans. Mexico did their due diligence, and the Guatemalans did. But then, as Todd said, when 2020 rolled around and all the Democrats were pandering to the illegal immigrants and the migrants to come into the United States and come into a borderless country, all of these oppressed people with smartphones who were tuned into the media, and don't you just love it? They all have smartphones. They have Apples. They have Androids. You know, we're struggling to spend $300 to replace our phone, and all of these illegal immigrants have got iPhones, $600, $700, $800 iPhones, and they're in tune to what's happening in the United States, and they're absolutely loving. They're loving the fact that a left-wing pandering administration, a feckless administration, such as the Obama-Biden, and it's basically Obama's third term, are dictating policy to open America's borders and to dilute our constitutional republic. And, you know, you've got that nitwit, you know, communist Kamala, who gets slapped down by what? By the Guatemalan president. And to prove that she was lying. She was absolutely lying. Climate change is the reason for the influx. Give me a fucking break. You're nothing but a liar. I can't get over that. Honest to God, I can't get over that. Wow.
Yeah, and now it's happening on steroids, and we're not even, 4 months into this new administration? Holy mackerel.
Yeah. Holy cow is right. I mean, look at the destruction and how quickly the establishment got together to really dismantle everything that Trump did. I mean, dismantle it to the point where you've got Ecuador's in chaos, our borders in chaos, and all President Trump did. What did he do? He was a champion for the United States of America. He was a champion for border security, for the sovereignty of our nation, and it's being torn down. It's unbelievable. And this guy got 81 million votes? No. Not buying it.
No. It'll be interesting once these Arizona and Atlanta recounts are completed, what's going to happen. That I'm eagerly looking forward to.
Oh, that's, you know what? I found it. I found I got to read this to you because this is really funny. It's not funny. It's pretty sad. But the Boston Globe has an article, the liberal Boston Globe, and I had it up when I changed screens. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on a second. Let me go to this one. I'm on the wrong one. Sorry. I was on the wrong page. So the Boston Globe runs an article, and the title of their article is about they're going into the Arizona recount, okay? So the Boston Globe, oh, my goodness gracious, I lost it. Never mind. I'll have to get back to it. I just – it was beautiful. Trump makes fraudulent claim about election, and it's like they just can't stop. They are every way, shape, or form, they are trying to discredit Trump in any way they can. And the fact is that two more people, so they have a total of six affidavits now from individuals who have witnessed fraud. Oh, here we go. Inside the bizarre Arizona audit fueled by Trump's false claims of election fraud. So the Boston Globe now has stuck with there was no election fraud and Trump's false claims of election fraud. They don't want to get to the actual issue, right? They don't want to get – the Boston Globe has no interest in the facts. They've already made the determination that Trump's claim is false about election fraud. And yet we're hearing otherwise, aren't we? Yeah. I just
ponderous,
you know,
isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It honestly it is. And what's her name? Cindy Powell said there's 400,000 votes in question in Maricopa County. 400,000 of the 2.1 million ballots that were cast, 400,000 are in question. And Trump lost by 45,000, supposedly. But hey, the left wing has determined that Trump's false claims of election fraud, that's fueling this bizarre audit in Arizona.
Hey, if Pence had not caved, we would have found out probably within a month.
True that. And now you got other states like Pennsylvania and Georgia sending teams over to Arizona to see how they're conducting their audit. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting? Huh. Huh. Isn't that
all because of Pence, that piece of shit.
Hey.
Seriously.
He's all part of it. They're all part of that same system, right?
Yeah. And I was watching some video even on January 6th. There were like five or six Antifa-clad people in black gear, Antifa. They're just decked out like regular Antifa people that you see everywhere with the SWAT gear and all that. They were the first people inside the Capitol caught on camera. You probably seen it floating around. Yeah.
I did, and you know what else I did see? See, you had confirmed it, and somebody that's you actually don't know this individual, but unsolicited, I was speaking to a friend of mine who I hadn't spoke to in several months, and he told me that he actually went to Washington, D.C., and he said, I went to see the man. I wanted to be there, and I wanted to hear him.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, and I saw, he goes, you know, I did walk over to the Capitol. I didn't go inside. He said, I just didn't go inside, but I was watching the Capitol Police open up barriers and wave people through. And he goes, and you know, I saw these Antifa guys. I knew who these Antifa guys were. You could see they were all dressed in fatigues. They had their gear on. He says, there were some people, whether Trump people that got caught up in this. He goes, yeah. He goes, you know, I thought otherwise, okay? So I didn't want to get involved in it. He goes, but I could see why people got caught up in it. He says, but these were Antifa guys who were in there. They're the ones that are to blame. It's like, wow.
Boy, he sounds just like me. I had the same rap when I came back. Those are my same observations.
And this is from a guy that doesn't – this is from a person that does not know you. And I never discussed what you had said. I never discussed what you said – what you told me. Never. And this man said the same exact thing. And he said he was there. He watched the Capitol Police open the barriers, and they were actually waving people to go inside the Capitol. He goes, how is that an insurrection? And he's absolutely right.
Wow, that's interesting. He got there before I did because the barriers were already down when we got there. So, yeah, makes you wonder.
Yep. Unsolicited, too. So that was the interesting part of it. And he came, and it was the same thing that you ended up saying. So, yeah.
Very interesting.
Well, great interview. It was Todd Benzman is certainly someone to watch and someone to read, and very, very impressed with his writings, his articles, and the amount of time he devotes to his craft. Man, this guy does a fantastic job. Wow. I'm so impressed.
I forgot to ask him how many languages he speaks.
Oh.
Can you imagine him and Claire doing a show?
Oh, my Lord. Have mercy. Whoa. Whoa. Oh, man, you know what else? I forgot. And maybe we'll save this for next time because he was on such a roll. But in some of the papers I read about Todd, he was involved in breaking the Holy Land Foundation story back in 2008. He was at the Dallas Morning Star and was one of the persons who broke the story. That was interesting.
Gosh. Well, if you opened up that can of worms first, we probably wouldn't have gotten to anything else.
No, you know what? You're absolutely right. I mean, that opens up a whole Pandora's box, doesn't it? The Holy Land Foundation terror trial and the funding of Hamas.
That's kind of the foundation, and then the immigration thing builds on that. When was that Holy Land? Let me see what date that was. Let's see. HLF trial. I'm just curious. Maybe we'll have him back for the anniversary.
Oh. Yeah, I'd like to speak to him on that. What? When?
Let's see. Began July 23rd, 2007.
Okay.
On October 22nd, 2007, Judge Fish declared a mistrial.
Mistrial. But in 2008, they retried it, and they found eight people guilty.
Mm-hmm. What date was that, September?
I think it was September of 2008, because 2007, it was a mistrial, and then 2008, it was reheard, and there were seven people, and they're all seven are in jail right now. Minimum of 15 mm-hmm. years, and two of them got 60 years in jail.
Let's see, 95, the U.S. government designated Hamas a special designated terrorist group. 2001, Treasury Department designated the Holy Land Foundation as specially designated global terrorists. So it all started in 2001, 2002, then to 2004. HLF filed a complaint with the Department of Justice alleging the FBI falsified affidavits. First trial was in 07, October of 07. It took 6 years to get that thing to trial. I never looked through the timeline. So this is kind of interesting.
Yes. And I think it's really important.
Yeah, second,
and that's, yeah, that would be great second, to get him on the show.
Yeah, second trial, Judge Solis, whose name we've sported around quite a bit, was in 2008. Sentences went out May 27th of 2009.
Hmm.
Then HLF appealed in October of 2010, and I think they lost that. Then HLF wanted a rehearing in 2011. But they never did have any other trials after that. Let's see, 2015, Solis denied HLF leaders' motion to vacate their sentences. Now, this thing went on forever. The legal bills must have been out of this world.
well, they have an unlimited resource, don't they?
Yeah, $5 million in HLF funds were frozen by the government. So $5
million. $5 million.
That's just the tip of the iceberg that they had.
Yeah, because they raised over, they raised over $200 million for them.
Yeah. So I guess the whole thing sealed up October 24th, 2020. August 24th. Man.
Yep. That's something to talk to Todd about again. That would be really interesting to speak to him on.
Yeah, because this is kind of, because there was supposed to be another trial that never happened because I think, who was it, Obama came into office and squashed it?
Yeah.
Or was it?
Yep.
I think it was Obama. Or was it Clinton
it was,
that squashed it?
No, it was Obama.
To Obama?
Yep. Yep. He squashed it. And that's when the Muslim Brotherhood had access to the White House. So there you have it. Now who's back in the White House? Muslim Brotherhood's back in the White House.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
This is only what we know about. This is just public consumption. This is probably only a quarter of the story.
And that's why it would be great to speak to Todd, because he's got firsthand knowledge, and it would be interesting to hear what caused him to look into the HLF that he wrote about and caused the breaking of that news.
Mm-hmm. Hey, send him an email. Say, hey, would you want to talk about the Holy Land Foundation trial in depth?
Yeah, that's a good idea. I know he's going to be busy with his project down in Panama and Nicaragua, so that'd be great to speak to him on, you know, certainly with that, and also, you know, what he hears about the, what his take or his side, which would be the real side of the HLF trial.
Mm-hmm. And then what came out of it that foreshadowed events of today?
What came out of it is also the explanatory memorandum. So
that was just
released
by luck.
Yeah, right. Yep, just by luck. The explanatory memorandum, man. People don't talk a lot enough about that. And you know what? That's all tied to the Holy Land Foundation. So.
Yeah. I should have blown them up and locked them. They should all been leaving the country at that point.
Yeah. Yep. Instead, we're apologizing to him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's really sad, the state that we're in right now. It really is. And to see how intentionally this administration is tanking the border issue, that really should be troubling to each and everybody in America, each and every American. I mean, what a betrayal of trust for America by this the Biden-Harris administration.
Yep.
All right. Hey, I got to go. We got our electric back on. Thank God. Oh my gosh, man. Wow.
Hey, at least we'll have air conditioning.
Wow. She's like 10 minutes before the show, the power comes back on. Oh, you bet. Okay. So, hey, have a nice evening. Sue, you have a nice evening as well. Thank you for joining us this evening, and I hope you enjoyed the interview. Al, have a nice evening. Be safe out there.
All right, you too. Have a great week. Adios, amigos.
That's all, folks.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.